Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. I offer myself at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, whose grace flows through everything that Radio Sai attempts to offer at his lotus feet. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and thank you for your company on Morning Glory Thursday Live. We are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual epicenter of the universe. Today is the 14th of May, 2015, and the time in the ashram right now is exactly 40 minutes past 9 a.m. Indian Standard Time, and I am Karuna from Team Radio Sai. Current temperature in the Divine Valley is 32 degrees Celsius, and it is expected to rise to 36 in the afternoon. Our overnight lows are in the 25 degrees Celsius range. The weather forecast is calling for a cloud cover and some thunder and rain activity over the next 3 days. Today on Morning Glory, I have lined up two brand new programs for you. And through both the offerings, what comes through loud and clear is how successful Bhagwan Baba has been in reviving the glory of the Vedas and the Vedic culture around the globe. From the Japanese to the French devotees of Bhagwan Baba, you will find Vedic chants flowing with ease from foreigners who have embraced Sanatan Dharma as a way of life while staying true to their own faith. What a contrast from the so-called educated and modern Indians, many of whom are entirely unfamiliar with the Vedas or their glory. So first, I will play for you a special conversation with a group of Baba's devotees from Japan. They were here in the ashram recently as part of the large contingent of Buddhists from around the globe to celebrate Buddha Purnima in the holy premises of the Prashanthi Nilayam ashram. This special conversation will be followed by a brand new program. It's called Learning with Love. Today, with all our love and prayers, we will offer this new series at the lotus feet of our Lord Sai by debuting it on Morning Glory. This is yet another 90th birthday special initiative by Team Radio Sai. Learning with Love is a new series that will be aired occasionally, wherein devotees will talk of the lessons they have learned as a result of their association with the Apostle of Love. My guest today is a 23-year young lady from France, Miss Marine O. Franck. I will feature this first episode of Learning with Love in the latter half of Morning Glory. For now, let's begin with the recent special conversation that we recorded with a team of Buddhists from Japan. Here it is for your inspiration. Please have a listen. Om Shri Sai Ram. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Radio Sai. Buddha Purnima 2015 has been a beautiful celebration here in Prashanthi Nilayam. It was led by Baba's devotees from Zone 5 countries, and leading the charge, leading that group, were devotees from Japan. And today at Radio Sai, we are ever so happy that we have some members of the Japanese troop here with us to share their stories of how they planned such a beautiful, elegant, superb, high-quality presentation for Bhagwan for Buddha Purnima 2015. It'll be my great pleasure to introduce some of them to you. And just so you know that we celebrated Buddha Purnima on May the 3rd and 4th, 2015 this year. And amongst my guests is Brother Arishima. He's from Tokyo and he's a CEO of a business management consultancy firm called Prema 9. He's also the National Bhajan Coordinator for all of Japan and is an office bearer in the National Japanese Sai Organization. Welcome to you, Brother Arishima. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. Also with us is Sister Toshiko Iota from Tokyo. We have had Sister Toshiko on Radio Sai earlier. She is a very talented lady, Balvikas Guru. She heads the education wing, the Satya Sai Education Wing of Japan. She is a bhajan coordinator as well as a ballet dancer and a ballet teacher. Sairam, Sister.
Sairam.
Welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam.
After Sister Toshiko, it is my pleasure to introduce to our listeners Brother Yasuka. Brother Yasuka works in the area of software and network services. He's from Kobe in Western Japan and he's an assistant bhajan coordinator and an assistant youth coordinator. Sairam, Brother Yasuka.
Sairam.
Welcome to Radio Sai.
Thank you.
We also have with us Brother Tomohisa Iota. Brother Tomohisa Iota is a technical consultant in an IT company. He lives in Tokyo. He speaks good English, as you will soon discover. He is also the National Spiritual Coordinator for Japan. And most interestingly, he's been so profusely blessed by Swami, he's the Vedam Guru in Japan. Sairam, Brother Tomo.
Sairam.
Welcome to Radio Sai.
Thank you.
And finally, this conversation would not have been possible without the help and assistance of Sister Kimiko Jayalakshmi Chaudhary, who is from Japan and lives in Prashantinilayam Puttaparthi full-time, and she's going to help us as the translator. Sairam, Sister Kimiko.
Sairam.
Thank you for your help.
Welcome.
Now, let's begin with my first question about this relationship of the Japanese people to Gautam the Buddha, a prince who was born in India and who's so loved and revered in Japan today. What can you tell us about it?
Sairam.
Sairam, brother.
Sairam. My name is Masahiko Arishima. I'm staying in Japan. I'm National Bhajan Coordinator. Now question. 日本は古くから神道というシャーマニズムやアニミズムといった自然崇拝、精霊崇拝である多数教、八尾万の神に基づく宗教文化があります。そうした土着的な信仰として、水の神様、木の神様、空気の神様、山の神様、海の神様、そういった八尾万の神を尊ぶ精神性があります。
From ancient times, Japan has had a religious culture based on polytheism. We call it as 八尾万の神. There are 8 million deities. Worshipping nature or spirits like shamanism or animism, including the Shinto religion. We have worshipped God of water,God of tree, air, and so forth.
お正月の初詣で手を合わしたり、人は亡くなると神になるという信仰から、ご先祖様に手を合わせるという習慣があります。
In modern time, we encounter religion through memorial service. Because of this spirit, we visit a shrine or temple at the beginning of the new year.And we join our hands together as pranams to ancestors because we believe that once body is gone, man becomes God.
昔からこういった神様を信じる心というのは日本人は持っていたんですけども、その神様というのは周りにいて私たちを見ているという意識が子供の頃から教わってきました。でもそれは実は私たちが間違ったことをしないように、お父さんお母さんたちが子供たちの教育のためにそうやって教えてきたんですね。神様が見てるから正しいことをしなさい、悪いことをしちゃダメよっていうふうに教えて教わってきました。ただスワミだけが私たちの中に神様がいるというのを教えてくださいました。
Because of this thought spirit we have been taught from the childhoodGod is outside. So God is watching you. You have to be good. Mm-hmm. That's what we've been taught as mm-hmm. Japanese. But nobody has taught us God is within you. That's where Swami comes. The Swami himself taught us there is God within you. So be good. See good.
日本に仏教がもたらされたのは今から1263年前奈良のブッダの開眼式というやつです。 その時、インドから来られたお坊さん、菩提僊那という方が日本に呼ばれて、大仏様の開眼の儀式を担当しました。この大きな仏像は高さが15メートルぐらいあって、ユネスコの遺産に登録されています。この式典は日本の聖武天皇ご自身によって開催されました。国を守る、鎮護国家の目的で世の中の平和をもたらすため、仏教は保護されて広められました。
About 1200 years ago, Buddhism was brought to Japan and there was a grand ceremony held by Japanese Emperor Shomu. Buddhist priest named Bodhisena was called from India and he initiated the ceremony of inserting eyes to a 15-meter giant statue of Buddha called Daibutsu, which is part of a UNESCO World Heritage.
May I ask, where was this statue installed in Japan where Bodhisena inserted the eyes?
Yeah, in Nara.
In Nara? Nara where is Nara located?
It is near the Kyoto or Osaka.
I see. Wow.
At that time in Japan, a lot of disturbance was going on in this country. So Emperor promoted and protected Buddhism for spiritual protection of the state. Buddhism was spread to Japan in order to bring peace to the country.
またこの時、仏教を通して日本とインドの国交が始まりました。それは今から1263年前のことです。
Buddhism marks the beginning of diplomatic relation between India and Japan. It was about 1200 years ago.
Wow. That takes us a long way back, India and Japan, Buddhism that united us. Now my question to you all is, how did Baba revive this interest in Buddhism amongst the Japanese devotees? Because you said that it was more a formal, customary ritual now. It was reduced in recent times. Your faith in Buddhism was reduced to a simple, customary ritual. When people died, you went to the temple and you prayed. But Swami seems to have revived and brought back Buddhism into the mainstream everyday life. How did that come to be?
My name is Masahiro Yasuoka. I'm from Kobe, Japan. I'm assistant Bhajan coordinator in Kobe Sai Center. 18 年前、スワミにインタビューでこう言われました。スワミ said, Japan has no culture.、そして私は、教育を受けていないとも言われました。スワミにそう言っていただいたので、その後、What is culture? 文化とは何かっていうことを自分なりにいろいろと調べました。日本人として生まれているのに、日本人としての精神性、行動様式、美徳というものを何も勉強していないということに改めて気がつきました。でもスワミはそのインタビューの中で、Don't worry, 心配するな。私が金に作り変えてあげますとおっしゃいました。
18 years ago, Swami told us in interview, Japan has no culture. And he also said, no education. After that, he did a lot of research as to what is culture.What does it mean to have culture? Then he came to realize that although he was born Japanese, he did not learn what it is to have Japanese spirit, behavioral pattern that is unique to Japanese, virtues that we hold. He has not learned any of that. At the same time, Swami said, Don't worry, I'll change you to gold.
So who's he we are referring to? Yourself, brother?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I see. Wonderful.
My name is Toshiko. 15年前、サーミのインタビューで、サーミはこうおっしゃいました。あなたたちは日本人です。仏教の国に生まれましたね。とサーミはおっしゃって、サーミと一緒に、サンケーモン、ブッダムシャラナムガッチャーミー、サンガムシャラナムガッチャーミー、ダンマムシャラナムガッチャーミーを唱えてくださいました。私たちは、自国の文化にはあまり興味がなかったのですが、それをきっかけに、仏教国の人間であるという意識が芽生えました。そしてその後にブッダブルニマでパルティの文化祭でブッダのドラマを上映することになり、それをきっかけにスワミのご講話でブッダのことを勉強し始めました。スワミが私たちの国の文化を学び直す機会をくださったのです。
My name is Kimiko. I'll be translating for Toshiko. 15 years ago,Swami said to us, You are Japanese. Japan is a Buddhist country. Then he chanted three treasures of Buddhism with us. Buddham, Saranam, Gacchami. Sangam Sharanam Gacham, Dharman Sharanam Gacchami. Until then, I was not interested in my own culture. I wanted to learn something else. But since this interview with Swami, I developed a sense of being born in a Buddhist country. And few years after that, we were given a chance to perform drama in front of Swami. And the theme was on Buddha. So we started studying about Buddha through Swami's discourse. We learned through Swami.
How interesting is that?
Yes. So Swami gave us the chance to learn about our own culture.
How wonderful. Because as Baba said, he did not want anyone to change their religion. He wanted them to follow the religion of their choice, of their culture or their birth. So he didn't come here to start a new religion, but to help a Buddhist become a true or more loving and more compassionate Buddhist, and so on and so forth. That's very interesting to know. Now, Zone 5 countries led by Japan, 2 days ago we saw beautiful presentations, lovely Buddhist decorations that your country was leading in coordinating in Prashanthi Nilayam for Buddha Purnima 2015. How did you all go about coordinating such a big task to bring a lovely presentation as you did from so many diverse countries of the Far East?
はい。今回のブッダプレにはゾーン5とゾーン4の合同で、私たち日本文化祭の中のクワイアを担当しました。デコレーションや他のカルチャープログラムや劇やスピーチは他の国の人が分担して行ないました。So
for this year's program, it was the joint effort by Zone 4 and Zone 5. And Japan had the chance to offer the cultural program, which is singing, choir, but other things that other country came and they did a wonderful job.
How did you all go about picking the theme of your program or your choir?
2011年の4月にスワミがお亡くなりになって、その次の月5月から1年間、毎週日曜日にバジャンが終わってから、スワミのお話をテーマにした朗読劇とディボーショナルソングを歌うというプログラムを開催してました。その延長線上でバクティクラブというウェブページを作り、スワミが肉体を去られた今でも日本の帰依者がスワミへの帰依を感じられるようなエピソードの朗読や歌を収録して公開しています。スワミの美しいエピソードを聞き、ディボーショナルソングに聞き入ることでスワミへの帰依を高め、スワミを近くに感じられることができるようにという目的でバクティクラブは始まりました。
Since Swami passed away, we have been conducting a mini program with dramatic reading and devotional song, singing after Sunday bhajan. This started from May 2011 and went on for 1 year. Along the line, we have launched a web page called Bhakti Club.The purpose is for devotees to feel bhakti towards Swami. Even Swami is physically no longer here with us. Feel him close by listening to beautiful episodes, devotees' experiences, and through devotional songs. So we have been recording this for 3 years, and we have recorded many songs through this seva.
こうした活動を私たちは3年間行っている間にたくさんの曲ができてきて、今回のクワイアの選曲のベースとなっています。今回のブッダプルニマのコーディネートは、私たちが知らない間に2年前からもう始まっていて、その集大成が今回のクワイアという形になって現れているのかもしれません。
So many songs we sang during this year's program.We're taking from the Bhakti Club and all this mini program. As far as coordination goes, without us knowing, we have been preparing ourselves since the last 2 years for this Buddha Purnima. So this is like the completion of all the sevas we have done in the past.
I see. It all came together so nicely.
Exactly.
So that sounds wonderful that without your realizing, you were already for last 2 years working towards this beautiful grand culmination that we experienced in the cycle Vanthal. So now we know who was pulling all the threads from behind the scenes. Now, how did you work out the details as well as the theme of this program is what I mean to say. How did you work it all out?
今回の、クワイアのテーマは神への信愛、バクティです。日本人は英語があまり うまく喋れないので、バクティを表現できる機会は歌であると思いました。
The theme for this program is bhakti towards Swami.
A devotion.
Devotion, yes. Because Japanese people cannot express ourselves in English, so we wanted to create a chance as a coordinator for people to express themselves. And the best way was by singing devotional songs.
ギータの十二章十二節にバクティヨーガを語る節が私にとって霊的に大変意味のある言葉です。知識より瞑想が勝り、瞑想よりも放棄が勝る。家宝を放棄すれば速やかに心は平安になる。クワイアのリードシンガーとしての役目、コーラスの指導者としての役をやらせていただいたことによって、スラミから真の消え者の姿を見せていただいたように思います。歌が上手い人、あまりそうではない人、スキルに関係なく、皆さん一生懸命スワミにお捧げしたいという思いで一心に歌っている。その姿を見ていて、これこそ瞑想であり、瞑想は知識に勝るということを見せていただきました。音楽的な感覚があまりない方は、みんなに、あまりみんなの足を引っ張らないように一生懸命歌っていました。
To him,12th verse of 12th chapter from Bhagavad Gita on Bhakti means a lot in his spirituality. Knowledge is prior to practice. Meditation is better than knowledge. Renouncing the lures of action is prior to meditation. For from renunciation comes inner peace. He has been appointed as lead singer of the choir.And also as a singing teacher for devotees. Through this seva, he feels Swami has given him the chance to witness the form of true devotion. There are many devotees who are good at singing, some not so good, but everyone sang with full of heart, with no hesitance to offer themselves to Swami, with single-pointed devotion for Swami. That itself is a true form of meditation.Some sang and tried hard not to be destructive to other singers.
That's so amazing. You Japanese devotees rock. You're so awesome in such a gentle, simple, sweet and sincere way. It's amazing to hear how deep you have gone into your sadhana. Now, my next question to you is, why do you Japanese people love Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba so much?
日本はプタパルティと物理的に離れているので、神を求める気心が深まると思います。
Physically, Japan is very away from Puttaparthi, so our devotion arises because of the physical distance.
Distance makes the heart grow fonder, as they say. Yes, yes indeed.
スワミを知る前に、通っていたその学校で、いろいろなその宗教の誘いっていうのを受けていて、で、どれを聞いても何か自分の中にまだピンとくるものがなくて、で、その時に出会ったスワミの教えっていうのが、スピリチュアリティのもう完全な様々な宗教の教えをすべて自分の中に納得させてくれるような真理っていうのがあった。それで、スワミに対して興味を持つようになって、ここに来ました。
When during college days, he was being recruited to many, many religions. Everyone said, oh, you come, you get, you know, fulfillment, you come because we need people. But none satisfied him. He was in search of truth. And when he met Swami's teaching, he said, this is exactly what I have been searching for. So he just fell for Swami.
And what is it that keeps drawing all of you Japanese back to Prashanta Nilayam, back to Bhagwan's lotus feet, even today, 4 years after Mahasamadhi?
ここに来れば、サワミの面影が残っていて、
When she comes here, there's a remembrance of Swami.
サワミがここのプタパルティの地をお選びになって生まれ、そして育って、教えを広めた場所なので、やはり来れば、本当にサワミを感じることができます。
Swami himself has chosen this place to take a birth.And this is a place that he has spread his teachings. So whenever she comes here, she can feel Swami here and remember everything that has happened.
そして肉体のサーミとの思い出が鮮やかによみがえります。
The old memory comes back whenever she stepped into this place.
日本にいると、いろいろなノイズで神様に集中できない環境が多いというのが一つあります。で、それがこちらに来ると、24時間すべてにおいてスワミを感じられるし、さらにやはりいろんな個人的な奇跡がたくさん起こります。
Back in Japan, because of the circumstance, social things, that if you're doing your dharma in Japan, there are so many noises that's not very spiritual. So whenever he comes to Puttaparthi Prashantiniram, he can feel Swami, he can be in spiritual mode for 24 hours, and he can actually experience some small, small miracles all the time. That's why he comes here.
ともう一つあって、スワミが言われてる、ここはあなたの家です。で、私の家はあなたのハートですっていう言葉、見言葉をすごくやはりこちらに来ると深く感じます。
And Swami says, This is Puttaparthi Prashantiniram, this is your home. And Swami said, My home is your heart. That Swami's word really struck to him very deeply, so that's how he feels. He'll come back, come back.
日本で、バジャン会に参加していると、スワミに対するそのバクティっていうのはもちろん定期的に自分の中で感じることができるんですけども、ここに来ると24時間集中してその自分の感情っていうのをもっとリアルに体験することができる。で、この場所はさっきもおっしゃってたんですけど、自分が若い頃からスワミに対していろいろなその思いを持ったり学んだりした場所なので、ここに来ると、今までにスワミから教えていただいたことが思い出されたり、スワミとの体験で感じた感情っていうのをもう一回思い出して、それによってバクティを強くすることができるというふうに感じてます。
Back in Japan, whenever he attends the, Vajan, he periodic from time to time he can feel the spirituality.But once he comes here, it will become the intense sadhana. 24-7, he can just feel Swami and be in the moment. And whenever he comes, even since for 18 years he's been coming here, so all the learning that he was taught, he can feel it here and he can remember all that, then his bhakti goes all the way up. So that's why he chooses to come back and back and again.
Like a spiritual recharge, yes, I could, I may use that word.Sounds wonderful. Now my final question is for Brother Tomohisa Iota. You teach Vedam. You're a Vedam guru. You're born into the Japanese culture. It's just astonishing for us to fathom this and process this. How did you get into Vedas and how did you learn the Sanskrit language? I understand, Brother, that you are really a blessed person. Swami has given you many, many interviews.
では次は青田智久さんにインタビューをしたいと思います。あなたは日本で生まれて、まあ、日本語をお話をして、その中で今はベーダを教えになっている。サンスクリプト語を習って皆さんにベーダを教えている。どのようにしてサンスクリプトを学ぶようになりましたか？またあなたはもう何回も何回もスワミにインタビューを呼ばれて、とてもスワミに祝福されているとお聞きしています。またそのことをお教えください。
スワミのことを知って、そしてここのプラシャンティニラムに来るようになったのはもう20年ほど前になるんですが、ベーダに関して、勉強するようになったのは10年ほど前に日本、東京でサイの学生さんたちが仕事のために来日された時に、ぜひプラシャンティニラムで唱えているベーダを習いたいということをお願いしましたら引き受けてくださいまして、それからベダを教えていただくようになりました。
He has known Swami for 20 years, but it was until 10 years ago that he has started learning Vedam and chanting Vedam. You know, one of the Swami students had a work in Japan, and he was staying. Swami student was staying there, and he had a desire to chant the same Vedam that was being chanted in Mandir. So he had asked Swami student, "Can you please teach us?" Then he was gracefully yes, said yes, and that's when he started chanting, learning the Vedam.
What about the so very many interviews that he was blessed with?
インタビューのお話をしていただいてもいいですか?
What language did Swami communicate with you in?
Swami は何語でお話になったんですか？
英語なんですけども、けれども私はそんなに英語はまあこうして話している通りできないんですが、スワミはまあそれもちろんそれもご存知ですし、とてもシンプルな英語で本当に二言三言で教えてくださっていました。
Swami had spoken to him in English, but Swami is very aware that he does not have a very high English skill, so he had spoken very simple words, two to three words.
And when you remember 16 interviews, I understand, was it?
はっきりは覚えてないんですけど、20回ぐらい。
About 20 interviews.
About 20 interviews. When you look back in hindsight, what do you remember the most about those interactions with Swami? Who was sitting in across from you? What did you experience? Because I know the exchange of words was very limited, but I'm sure there was a lot more exchange happening at a deeper level. So what happened? What transpired? And what is the fondest memory you have of those about 20 private interactions you had with Sri Sathya Sai Baba?
20回インタビューを受けたときに、言葉自体はとても限られていたと思うんですけれども、スワミと青田さんの中で交わされた体験というものはすごく深いものがあったと思います。その中で一番深いところでスワミとつながった思い出、何か心に残っていること、どうやってスワミとどの時を過ごしたか、そういうことを教えていただけませんか？
スワミにお会いする前から、スワミの見教えを読んでいく中で、まあインドにはたくさんの聖者さんたちがいて、で、そうした聖者さんたちの多くが、神様との親しい関係を築いていたということを知るようになって、で本当に神様が実際に肉体を持って姿を持って目の前にいるわけでもないのに、そうした聖者さんたちは自分のハートを心の中で神様に語りかけて、そして神様と本当に親しい間柄を築いていらっしゃったっていうのを日本にいるときに勉強しました。それを知ったときに自分もそのようになりたいというふうに強く思うようになって、で、心の中で自分の中にいる、あるいは自分のもうすぐそばにいるスワミをイメージして、本当にスワミがすぐそばにいるというふうに思って、スワミに心の中で語りかけるようになりました。
Before meeting Swami, he has studied about Hinduism and all the, about the sages. And all these great sages, theytalk to God within themselves, even though God does not stand in front of them. They feel, all the sages feel closeness because God are within them. So by reading, by studying them, he had a desire to develop such feeling. So even before he had met Swami, he wanted to feel the closeness even without Swami's physical presence.
そしてスワミに語りかける生活をしていくうちに本当にインドに来たくなって、でインドで長く滞在させていただいた間にもこうやってスワミと心の中で語りか話していたんですが、それが本当にスワミの幸運なことにスワミに呼ばれるようになった時に、スワミのお近くに行った時にはスワミが本当にそれをもうご存知であるということを、言葉は少なくてもスワミの本当に優しい微笑みと私に対する接し方でそれがよくわかりました。
So even before he had come to India, having any interview, not 20 interviews, he has been speaking to Swami within, just like the sages. And because he was doing that, and that made him want to come and actually speak and be with Swami. So when he started actually getting the chance, Swami already knew that he's been constantly speaking to Swami. So even though there was no words,He knew everything about the prayer that he's been chanting, the talking that he has been. So, with one single smile, one single word, that was everything. That was enough. Because he has already developed that closeness with Swami.
They say the holy ones communicate in the language of silence. So, both of you communicated in silence. So, brother, my last request to you is, can you chant any small part of the Vedam that is your favorite for our listeners? Because it's such a treat to hear. Vedam is a universal prayer. It doesn't belong to any one religion. Sanatan Dharma is simply a way of life, and anybody and everybody can chant it. And it's so wonderful to know that in Japan,
Japanese people who follow Buddhism are also chanting Vedam for world peace and harmony. So please do us the honors.
では最後の質問として、日本に生まれて仏教徒の皆さんが、まあ、サナータマタナダルマとは言われますが、日本の方が唱えるベーダというのを聞く機会ってあまりないと思いますので、ぜひ何かお好きなベーダを一生唱えてください。
おなかるまななプラジャヤダネナティアゲナイケアムルタッタマナシュフパレラナカンニヒタングハヤビブラジャデタッヤタヨビシャンティベダンタビグニャナソニシチタッタサンニャサヨガッディアタヤシュッダサトワハते ब्रह्मलोके तु परान्तकाले परामृतात् परिमुच्यन्ते सर्वे दाह्रं विपापं परमेश्वभूतं यत् पुण्डरीकं पुरमद्यसग्स्तं तत्रापि दाह्रं गगनं विशोकस्तस्मिन् यदन्तस्तदुपासितव्यम्यो वेदादौ स्वरप्रोक्तो वेदान्ते च प्रतिष्ठितः तस्य प्रकृतिलीनस्य यः परः समैश्वरः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
Brother, I thank you so much for your chanting and your sharing, and I also bow to that cosmic power that has touched so many hearts in the form of Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba to bring about this sort of transformation. It's unbelievable the way you chant Vedam. I'm sure 99.99% of highly educated Indians can't even chant one line of what you chanted. It's quite an eye-opener. On that note, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Brother Arishima, Sister Toshika, I beg your pardon, Sister Toshiko Ayota, Brother Yasuka, Brother Tomohisa Ayota, and Sister Kimiko Jayalakshmi for joining us on Radio Sai. Thank you for your participation and Sai Ram to all of you.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. Today is the 14th of May, 2015, and the time in Prashant and Ilium right now is 16 minutes past 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time. You just heard a special conversation with Bhagwan Baba's devotees from Japan who were in Prashant and Ilium recently to celebrate Buddha Purnima. As you may know, Bhagwan Baba encourages everyone to follow the religion of their birth or choice and never ever believed in any form of conversion. Throughout his life, Bhagwan declared that he had not come to start a new religion, but to help each of us to be true to the path of our preference or birth, for religions may be many, but God is one. Paths may be many, but the goal is always the same. So what are your thoughts on this special conversation with the Japanese devotees of Baba? We welcome your feedback, comments and suggestions by email. You can reach us at listener@radiosai.org. And now, dear brothers and sisters, with much love and humility, Team Radio Sai offers at the lotus feet of our dearest Lord, Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba, a brand new series called Learning with Love. Learning with Love is a variant of our Trisvid Divinity Conversations with the value-added component, making it Trist with the Twist. In these interviews, Baba's devotees from around the world will speak of the lessons they have learned from their association with Baba, and in sharing these lessons, they will bring to life some of the experiences that delivered what are now their mantras for life. Sharing her learning with love today is a young French lady, Miss Marine O. Franck. This episode of Learning with Love was recorded at our Radio Sai studios in Prashantinilayam on 2nd of August 2014. So please enjoy this very first episode of Learning with Love
that we are debuting for Bhagwan's listening pleasure through your ears, for it is He who listens through each of our listeners.
Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to Learning with Love, our occasional series of conversations with Baba's devotees about the lessons they have learned through His love. Our guest today is a 23-year young lady, Marine Offron, from France. Marine holds a degree in English from France as well as a teaching degree from the Leicester University in the UK. She moved to the United Kingdom 3 years ago to study and just graduated as a teacher. She's very active in the UK SAI centers. She's a youth coordinator in Leicester. Marine enjoys playing the harmonium, singing bhajans and teaching Vedam. And she chants the Vedam as part of her involvement with the SAI movement. Sairam, Marine.
Sairam.
And welcome to Learning with Love on Radio SAI.
Thank you.
Now, Marine, your relationship with Baba is one of love.
Yeah.
What has His pure and selfless love taught you? Would you care to share some of the lessons you have gathered in your journey to and with Baba?
Yes, sure. It's a pleasure. One of the biggest lessons in my life is that Swami is omnipresent. He's everywhere. He's always by your side, wherever you go in the world. One incident made me realize that even more than anything else. So it was when I was in secondary school in France, and I was studying English, and I was in a special class because we had science in English, scientific English. It was different from the rest of the classes. And a trip was planned for this class, a trip for Norway, because the teachers wanted us to practice our English skills in speaking and listening. So they decided to send us into an English-speaking country so that we can get some experience and improve our English. So it was the first time for me that I was going away from home more than 2 days, and I was a little bit worried, and my parents as well. And so I was just preparing my bag, preparing my suitcase, and I was thinking, I want to take something which reminds me of Swami. I want to take a picture or a book, something just for me in the travel, so that if I'm worried about something, I can just look at my picture and feel better. I was 15 at that time. So while I was doing my suitcase, I just put a picture of Swami. And when I finished, I called my mom to check my suitcase with me. And when she saw that I took a picture of Swami, she said, "No, you should not take a picture of Swami." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Let me ask Dad, but I don't think you should take one." And then my parents talked together, and then they said, "No, you should not take any picture, because what if someone sees a picture of Swami and says, 'Who is that person?' Because in France, he's not accepted. So they're just a bit worried, what if someone questions me?" So they said, "You should not take anything." So I said, "Okay, I will go with nothing." I was a little bit sad, but it's okay. So I finished packing my luggage, and then we left to Norway, me and my class. And I was in the bus, and suddenly I just needed to take, I don't remember what it was, maybe a tissue in my bag, little bag. And I just put my hand in it. And at the bottom, I felt something very harsh. Usually I don't pay attention. I'm always thinking, oh, it may be dust or something in my bag, not relevant. At this time, something was pushing me to take that thing out of my bag to look what it was. And I just tried to pull it out, but it was not coming. I had to pull it very strongly. And when I managed to take it out, that was a medal of Swami, a heart-shaped medal of Swami with a grey collar, silver collar. And there was a picture very, very neat of Swami sitting on a chair. So I'm always wearing that medal with me wherever I go now. And behind that medal, it looks like crosses of David. And it's very, very light. And when I saw that medal, I was thinking, there's something wrong. I didn't take anything with me. And then I thought, oh, maybe my parents regretted that they said no to me. So maybe they decided to put something in my bag. So I was very happy. And when I came back home after that trip, I told my parents, I said, "Thank you so much for putting a medal in my bag for me." And they said, "We didn't put anything in your bag." They're very surprised. And my mom said, "You know, before giving you that bag, I made sure that it was empty. I took everything out from the bag, so it was really empty. And then you put your own things." So I was very surprised as well. And what is really amazing is that in that trip, it fell 2 times
without my will. So the first time in that coach, after I discovered it, even though I put it back into the bag, maybe an hour later, it just fell, but I didn't see it. And then we stopped somewhere, just for a break. And then when we came back into the coach, the bus driver said, oh, someone has lost a heart-shaped medal and showing to everyone, so everyone could see that medal. And I was thinking, my God, I was not sure whether it was mine, but I was praying it's not mine. But actually, when I checked my bag, it was not there anymore. So
the medal had a mind of its own.
Yes.
It wanted everyone to have its darshan, I guess.
Exactly.
Exactly. Had you seen one like that before at home?
Never. This picture has been seen a lot of time, but that medal, never it has been seen.
May I see it? Are you wearing it?
Yeah. Is that one?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's a heart-shaped locket surrounded by little stones or something, and Swami sitting. And let's see the back. Ah. Yes, it has a cross. You have to turn it at an angle to see, right?
Yeah.
And it has, the back is all silver.
Yeah.
And it's got fine design on it, and only when you hold it at an angle you can see the cross.
Yes, exactly.
So subtle and such good filigree work. It's amazingly beautiful.
I know, and even the picture is very, very neat.
And it's so clear. It's like the picture we put on all, many Sai centers have it on their altar, Baba sitting on a chair.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, absolutely. I have never seen anything like this, either as a materialization or as a product being sold. It's one of a kind, very unique.
Yeah, I even asked some devotees very close to Swami who have always been living here, and they said they've never seen that medal anywhere.
Neither have I. Never before. Anything close to it also. Very beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow. So that was such a strong lesson you learned at the age of 15.
Yeah.
You must have felt so protected throughout the rest of the trip.
I really felt that Swami was showing me that, don't worry, even though, you know, you can't take my picture, you can't take anything, I'm always with you in your heart. So from that day,
and that's why it's heart-shaped. It's in your heart all the time.
Oh, that's true. Eh? I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
And it fell a second time in the airport. We're just going back.
Wait, this locket likes to pop out of your bag on its own?
I think so, yeah. And it just like, it just jumped off my bag. It just fell like with a big noise on the floor.
Oh.
And I didn't even notice it. It's someone else, like my classmate, who saw it. So he said, oh, something fell down on the floor. And I saw it, I was like, my God, again the metal fell down.
Your bag didn't have a hole, I hope.
Sorry?
Did your bag have a hole?
No, there was no hole.
So it
was really normal bag.
So this locket likes to
give darshan.
Yeah, it likes to give darshan wherever it is required to.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm glad I had this darshan. So you're a very young person. You're 23. It's nice to hear of the lessons you've learned with Swami's love.
Yeah.
So what are your other guiding mantras in life?
Guiding mantras? Like lessons. My second lesson was, when you fully surrender to God, He takes care of everything. So it was when I was at university. It was my second year.
In France or the UK?
In France.
In France. Okay.
Yeah. And I was studying English. And for some reason, I really struggled more than my first year. There was really difficult subjects like civilization and literature, and I was really struggling with that. I didn't get good marks compared to my first year. I was getting really low mark, like 5 over 20 or 7 over 20.
That's trouble.
Yeah. And just few of them, I had 13 over 20. But just few of them, more bad marks than good marks. Mm. So I was really worried, and I really thought I would fail. And I had planned to do my third year in Leicester University in UK, because I wanted to improve my English. I used to love English very much, and I still do.
And you speak it so well now.
Thank you. So I was worried that if I don't get my marks, like at a good level, I will not be able to go to Leicester University. So I was really worried. One day, Swami put on my way Sai brother from Holland, and I was just talking about my worries. And he said to me, you have to leave everything at Swami's feet. He can do anything, even change your grades. Also, you have to live in the thought that you got it, you passed. Just visualize that you succeeded, it's already done. Just block all your thoughts telling you that you're not going to get it, and just think that you got it, that's it, that's finished. So from that day onwards, I was constantly fighting with my thoughts, and you literally feel you're fighting in your mind. So you have your thought telling you, no, you have so bad marks, you don't get it. And I was trying to say to my thoughts, no, I'm going to get it. Sami is going to help me to get it every day for 2 weeks. It was very tiring mentally, mm-hmm. but I still did that till the very end.
So who won, you or the mind?
I won.
Good for you.
I won. It was really hard battle. And so whenever a thought of worry would come, I would just think the opposite straight away, like, I succeeded, it's finished, it's done. The day when my results came, my grandparents were home, and there was that letter from university, and my granddad took it, and I was too scared to look at it. At that moment, I really felt worried. And then I said to my granddad, I can't open it, you open it for me. So he opened it, and then he was just reading it. He couldn't understand anything. He was like, oh, what does that mean, past? So I said to him,
that means you have to jump with joy.
I know. That means I succeeded. I just look my mark, and very strangely, you know, you have to get 10 over 20 to pass.
Yeah.
I got 10.2.
Oh.
So just like 10.2, yeah,
okay.
10.2, sorry, I mean.
So you just did 51%.
Yeah.
50 was passing, you made it 50, just scraped through the skin of your teeth, but that's good enough.
Yes, I could not believe it because all my marks were under 10, just few of them were above it. For me, it was a real miracle. And from that day, I really realized that whatever you leave to Swami's feet, even it seems impossible to you, it can become possible through Swami's will, through Swami's grace. So from that day, whenever I'm worried, I'm just literally leaving everything to His feet, and then I'm thinking, you take care of it. I'm worried, but you take my worries, you do it, and every time it goes well. And afterwards, I'm always thinking, wow, you really worked through me, Swami. So that was a really big lesson for me.
Marie, if I may ask, let's say you've surrendered an issue or a situation to Swami, and you have a certain preferred outcome that you want, that you desire, like you want to pass, and you left it to Swami. What if it ends up not materializing the way you wanted it? What if you end up failing? How will you handle your process of surrender then? What if the outcome is not what you had hoped for?
Well, if that happens, I'm always thinking that it's Swami's will, so I always try not to expect anything. So I'm always saying, I give you these worries, whatever happens is your will. So once I surrender, I know that the result is not mine, it's His. So whether I fail or I pass, I know it's His will. If I pass, He wanted me to pass, and if I fail, maybe He has a better plan for me. I can't see it now because my vision is not really broad. But His vision is large, and He knows that, oh, that thing is so much better and she has to do that, for example. So I never worry now. I always try to take everything as it comes and always, always surrender. And I know once I surrender, whatever happens, it's His will.
You're really very wise and mature for a 23-year-old young lady. Old and young don't go together, but you're so wise. Amazing.
My third lesson in my life is about education.
You're an educator yourself.
Yeah, I just graduated as a teacher. I did 1 year intensive training in Rashimi Teaching School in Leicester, which is linked with University of Leicester. And I realized throughout this training year that education is not mere giving of knowledge, but a heart-to-heart connection with every student. Throughout my teacher training, I didn't only focus on imparting knowledge of French, which I'm teaching, but also and above all, I considered my students as Swami's children. So even though I was not in a Sai school, I always kept in mind that it's all His children and it's my duty to educate them, both with mere knowledge, like French, and also spiritual knowledge. And it was my utmost aim to impart spiritual education. I didn't know really how to do it, but I know I had to do it. I read a lot about Swami's teachings about that. And in my class, I had lots of Gujarati students. And Swami put me in a house in Leicester where I'm surrounded by Gujarati people. Mm-hmm. So they talk all the time in Gujarati.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned it.
Oh, wow.
Not fully, but I can manage. So I can understand and I can...
Saruche.
Saruche. Yamcho. Wajawashe.
Very good. And you eat dokla?
Huh.
Hanji. Very nice.
Dokla kauchu.
Oh, excellent. Wow. Very impressive. Quite a linguist.
Hmm. I love languages. I really love. I learned Hindi first and then Gujarati.
And French and English. Wow.
Yeah.
I guess the language processor in your brain is very sharp.
Yes, I think so.
And you chant Vedam, you teach Vedam,
yeah.
Sanskrit again.
Yes, yes. So in my class, I had lots of Gujarati students, maybe 90% of them were Gujarati. And I was thinking, like I've been told beforehand that these students, they don't really understand English, and also they're learning French. So they have two different languages, but they talk a third language. So it was going to be very hard for me to adapt. And in England, it's called EAL learners, so English as an additional language learners. And we have to learn how to cater for these needs. And I was very careful. In my heart, I really tried to communicate with them and make them feel that I cared for them. So all those Gujarati students, I could just have ignored them and just focus on the ones who understand me, because otherwise I could think they will make me lose my time. But I actually thought that no, I have to care for them as well. I have to make some time to explain to them. So I used to start my lessons and start my students off on some task, and then I will go to these students, Gujarati speakers, and I will ask them if they understood. And some of them, they will just tell me in Gujarati or Hindi that Nati Samju, I don't understand, miss. So in my head, I was thinking I have to explain to them in some way. So I decided to explain in Hindi or in Gujarati sometimes. So you have to write this, you have to look at that, have to think about this. And they will understand. They will understand me. I was so happy.
Wow, what a dedicated young teacher you are. To go that far, that extra mile.
Yeah, I really felt that we have to consider their needs as well, and they're human beings like us, they have a heart, yes. And they want to feel cared about as well.
Of course, and to have that sensitivity, I guess Baba has taught you that.
Yes, Swami taught me that. And what showed me that really I did well is at the end of the year, when it was time for me to leave, because it was just a placement, I said bye to my students, and all the students who always understand or who learned really quickly, they were not really showing any sadness, or they just said bye and they're just like so impatient to go out of the room, as like most of the students. But a group of Gujarati students came to me, and one of the Gujarati girl, maybe she was 12 years old, she had told me at the beginning of the lesson she was going to miss me, and I thought it was a joke. But she came back at the end. And she said, Miss, I'm really going to miss you. And she cried a lot. And she said, you know, like, you used to talk to us in Gujarati. You used to explain to me everything in Gujarati. And I'm really sad that you're leaving now, because you cared so much for me. Mm. And at that moment, I really felt that I did my duty. I felt that the pleasure of a student who doesn't understand but for whom we care about is so much important, more important than just giving your knowledge and leaving the room and just leaving them absolutely not understanding.
Only when we touch the lowest common denominator in the class, we have reached everybody. And yeah. I think that requires so much of sensitivity.
Yes.
And Swami says there are two professions that have possibly the profoundest impact on society. One is teachers, the other is doctors.
Yes.
If teachers and doctors perform their duty the way you're saying, with heart to heart, connecting with every student or patient, then there is a huge transformation happening.
Yeah. Because you feel connected, you feel like they are your children and you have to care for them. So, because you could be very close-minded as well, you could just think, I'm coming here just to teach, impart knowledge, and then leave, and then they manage. But no, you have to, I always try to look at every child in their eyes and just think through them in their heart. I always try to make them feel that I care for them. And I always keep in mind what Swami says about education. It's true education is not only imparting of knowledge, also it's also through the heart. Yeah, so I always try to do that.
Beautiful. So did you grow up in the Sai culture?
I came to know Swami when I was 8 years old.
Through your parents, I'm
through guessing. My parents. My parents were looking for a spiritual path, and they had one Indian friend, I think he was Indian. He gave them a book called Summer Showers in Vrindavan, that you may know. And Swami wrote that book.
Right.
So when they read that book, they saw he can't be a human being who wrote that book.
The discourses that Swami gave in summer course.
Yeah. So when they finished that book, they thought it's some really high divine being who wrote it. And when they read that he was living in Puttaparthi, that's it, they booked their ticket and they decided to go. But so, I was too small at that time, so I didn't come with them. And my brother, who is 5 years younger than me, he could not come as well. So they went, and then they came back, and they said that was the one, that was their path, that was Swami, who was going to be their guide for the rest of their life. And me as a kid and my brother as well, we just followed, and I never had any doubt. So Swami has always been for me my guide, inspiration, and master, everything. And when I came here for the first time in Puttaparthi, I felt so much love as well, so much love. And he looked at me as well one time, very strongly. So I really felt that Swami was really the one.
Wow, what can I say? You have very noble parents, Mr. and Mrs. Offran,
yeah,
of France,
yeah,
who have raised you so well.
Yeah, thanks to Swami.
Absolutely.
And finally, the last lesson I wanted to talk about is mm-hmm. about Vedas.
Oh, wow.
I realized the importance and value of Vedas, not at the beginning, but later on. Just briefly, so I learned Vedas by listening to them, being sung in our little group at home in France. And
where do you live in France?
I live in the east, near Switzerland.
I see.
So it's in the countryside, small village with lots of lakes, woods, fields.
Sounds beautiful. What is it called?
It's called Rosé Fluant.
Okay, Rosé Fluant.
Yeah.
Did I say it right?
Yeah, it was good.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so my parents learned them, and they used to sing in family and also in group. And I was very small, so I used just to listen to them, not sing them, but I used to listen to them, and I was in my room or just in the living room. And my dad taught a little group as well. And he had received a CD of Veda Saharthan, so he learned as well with that. And then my parents decided to make little booklets of Vedam. So they did a coding with colors, so with red representing the high pitch and blue the low pitch, so that it's easier to visualize it. Mm-hmm. And then we went to see different people to ask for advice, like Vednarayan. Then the last person was Maunish Vyas. So he's a Vedic teacher from Bombay.
Mm-hmm.
You may have heard of him.
Yes, I have.
Yes. So he became the Vedic teacher of my dad. It's been some time now.
Wow.
And he's learning through him, and he's learning with the Sandhi rules. So I learned as well from my dad, and I learned with the Sandhi rules. So what I teach in Leicester now is, it's like that. I don't teach a simple Vedas.
You know,
teach
this is like
Sandhi
revival
rules
of the Vedic culture, because Vedas were taught by rote from one master to another to another.
Yeah.
Thanks to Swami, who has revived this interest in Vedam, people are learning from scholars, from each other, and the tradition is still living and being revived.
Yes. Yes, I feel very happy. I feel very blessed to be able to teach these sacred scriptures. It's very sacred.
So what chants do you know?
I know quite a few. I know Rudram, Ganapati Atavashyasham, Ganapati Pratana, Narayan Suktam, Narayan Upanishad, Shivopasana Mantra, Kshama Pratana, Purusha Suktam. I know quite a lot.
I'm extremely embarrassed to hear that, because my repertoire is very limited. That is so impressive, Marine. That is so impressive. God bless you.
Thanks to my parents and
yes.
Swami.
Thanks to your parents and Swami. Indeed, well
yeah.
said.
So, both my parents learned through Maunish Vyas, and I learned through that as well. And Maunish Ji taught the Vedas, so using the Sandhi rules, so conjugation of Sanskrit, conjugation rules. And for example, if you have Gananaam Toa, it will become Gananaan Toa with the Sandhi rules. So we learned everything like that. And so at the start, I used to find Vedas quite boring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's quite neutral. It's not like bhajan when you have tabla and harmonium, you sing, you have intonations. Vedas are quite neutral, like in the pitch. So I used to be a bit bored if it was more than 10 minutes. And I always preferred bhajan. However, at that time, I was not really realizing the importance of Vedas. So I was not thinking. For me, it was just Veda, scriptures, that's it. And Swami had a big plan for me to realize the importance of Veda. So when I came to Leicester, in Leicester they sing Vedas before bhajan session. So they sing Ganapati Pratana and first Namakam of Rudram. So I used to sing along with them. And when they saw that I could sing, some of them, and in particular the center chair, asked me how I learned them. She started questioning me what my parents are doing in France, are they doing Veda? So I said that they're teaching in Paris. And then they asked me to do a presentation in the center about Vedas. So it means I had to look for information about Vedas. So with some help, I came across some videos of Swami talking about the importance of Vedas and the importance of Rudram in particular. So I had to listen to it, obviously. So it made me realize how important it is, and I could see even the expression of Swami when he was talking about it. And it's really something which is in his heart, if I can say, and really wants people to learn it. So when I listened to that, it was the first step for me to realize. So then I did my presentation in my center. Thanks to Swami, it went really well, and it was really well appreciated. And they just talked to some of the people from outside, you know, like words of mouth. And I've been asked to come to another center in London, then another center in Wolverhampton, and another city as well, I don't remember the name.
Oh, English-speaking French girl promoting Vedam knowledge. Indeed. That's truly Swami. That's only Swami can do.
Yeah, I could not even believe it at that time. Like, why me as a French person I have to promote Vedas? It's so strange for me.
No, it's not. You're an old soul. Who knows what you did in your last life, past lives?
Yeah.
Which Himalayan tree you lived under and from which master you learned. You're just bringing back what you know from before. We all are supposed to have this knowledge within us.
In previous lives.
Yes.
Yeah.
My God, so interesting.
It's really thanks to Swami, everything. And so I did my presentations everywhere. So every time I was repeating the same thing, so it was going in my mind more and more and more. So then I really knew it by heart. And then I also took inspiration from the very valuable book of Monish Vyas, Rudra Tattva, which explains all the inner significance of Rudram. And I took some bits here and there in the book to put in my presentation. And it really taught me as well that the Vedas, the way it's translating, there's literal translation and also the inner meaning. Mm. So you can read about Shiva, please Shiva, don't unbow your your bow. And but actually the inner meaning will be something else, like don't let your bad feelings like anger come through you, just control them. So everything has an inner meaning.
Yeah.
So in that
otherwise
book,
it sounds fun, you know, like strike terror at the heart of my enemies. But those enemies are inner enemies, not people
yes.
you don't personally like.
Yes. I know.
So the enemies are, you know, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, and it's all anger, jealousy, ego, hatred, and so on. But if you take it literally, it sounds very superficial.
Yes, that's true, very true.
Yeah.
So the inner signification of Rudram is very well explained in it. And when I was doing the presentation in the Sai Center, it's really made me realize a lot. And Swami, after that, he had not finished with his divine plan. He was planning something else.
Mm-hmm.
And he planned for me to start teaching Vedas. So what happened, some devotees in the center were really interested to learn Rudram. And when they learned that Swami is putting so much importance on it, they said, oh, you know it, can you teach it to us? So I said, okay. And I was feeling it's really Swami's work because my dad is already teaching in France. And now I'm taking it over in England as well. So I said,
yes. You're continuing the wonderful tradition.
Yes. So I said, Swami, you're really putting me in front of Vedas, me who used to find it quite boring. Now you're pushing me into it and you're telling me to teach them. So and I have to appreciate.
I find wonderful in what you're saying is the fact that Swami has broken all taboos. And for a young lady to teach Vedam, because people might have that mindset that Vedam was only men were the repository of Vedic wisdom and only they were supposed to pass it on. Swami said men, women and children all can chant and learn Vedam. And here you are, a young lady from France who is teaching Vedam to people in the UK. What a breaking of barriers. It's quite a trailblazing event, I think.
Yeah.
Don't you agree?
I agree, yeah.
It's so out of the box and it's so out of the set traditional mindset that we all, some people might have had about Vedam.
Yeah, some people tell me maybe I was Indian in my last life. Maybe that's why.
And that's why you picked up Hindi and Gujarati and Dokla so quickly.
I really love it.
As well.
I really love it. Really, Indian languages, whatever I can learn, I will learn. I really love speaking with the people in their language. So that's why I learn. So I started Rudram lessons. And my aim was for the Rudra Ekadashini Homam. Because it's being held every year in Birmingham with the Sai organization, Vilongkir and Uncle. It's all organized there every year. So I'm just preparing my group every time for Rudram like that. I think that's all the different incidents which made me realize even more the importance. Because while teaching Vedas, I had to accept it. I had to like doing it for an hour or 2 hours, teaching them and seeing them with joy. And now every time I go to teach Vedas, I always ask Swami to sing through me. Because sometimes I'm very tired or I'm sick after my day, so I'm just asking Swami, please, you teach Vedas through me. I can't do anything without you. I will let you just do the lesson through me. And every time it goes well, and with the time going on, I have more and more energy, very strangely. So towards the end, I'm very energetic. And even though sometimes just two people come to learn, sometimes 10, sometimes 2, but I realize that it's not the number of people coming which is important. It's even one person. I'm already transmitting Vedas and Swami must be very happy. That's what I used to think.
Indeed.
So that was, for me, 4 big lessons in my life amongst lots of other lessons. That was for...
You've learned to Swami's love.
Yes.
Marie, always. May I ask you to just chant anything short and sweet from the Vedam before we conclude this conversation?
Yes, sure. I just take my book so that I don't do any mistake.
Sure.
So I think the Ganapati Pratana. Okay. Om Gananantwa Ganapati Gumhava Mahe Kavinkavinamupamasravastamam Jeshtharajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspata Anishrunvannoti Bhissidasadhanam Prano Devi Sarasvati Vache Bhirvajini Vati Dhinama Vitriyavatu Ganeshaya Namaha Sarasvatyai Namaha Shri Guru Bhyo Namaha Harihi Om Om Shanti, shanti, shanti.
Marvelous, splendid. All I can say is your father has done a fantastic job of transmitting the knowledge of the Vedas to you. I bow to your parents for doing such a fine job of raising a fine young lady like yourself.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for sharing the lessons you have picked at your young age through Swami's love.
That was my really huge pleasure. Thank you for inviting me for the interview.
Pleasure. Sai Ram Marin.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, you just heard the very first episode of our occasional new series, Learning with Love. Through your listening pleasure, we offered it at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet. My guest today was a young French lady, Miss Marine O'Franck. As you may have noticed, Learning with Love is a variant of our Triswit Divinity conversation with the value-added component, making it Trist with a Twist. In these interviews, Baba's devotees from around the world speak of the lessons, the life lessons that they have learned from their association with Bhagwan, and in sharing these lessons, they bring to life some of the experiences that delivered what are now their mantras for life. This new initiative is one of our many humble offerings for the 90th birthday of Bhagwan's divine advent.
We look forward to your feedback, comments and suggestions. So please go ahead and drop us your email at listener@radiosai.org. With that, it is time for me to bid you Sairam. And as I do so, I wish to play for you the theme of the 90th year of Divine Advent, composed and created by the music maestro of Radio Sai, Brother Anirudh. Please enjoy it as part of our ongoing celebrations to mark the 90th year of the Divine Advent. Jai Sai Ram.
Prema Swarup Lara.
Happy, 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 be happy. Happy, happy, make others happy. All will be happy, God will be happy.
Saishwaraya Vidmahe.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai.